The rented room turned out to be surprisingly cozy. Oil lamps shed a golden glow over the wood-paneled walls and chunky furniture. Large, comfortable-looking chairs sat before a crackling fire. Two men stood together by the chairs, facing Hawk and Burns with determined casualness. They looked embarrassed and perhaps just a little frightened. Hawk studied them both, letting the silent moment stretch uncomfortably. Burns stirred at his side but made no move to intervene. The man to their left shifted nervously.
"Good evening, Captains. It's good of you to visit us. It's not often the guard takes an interest in our work. I'm Nicholas Linden, attorney. Perhaps you've heard of me. And this is my associate, Michael Shire, once a captain of the guard, now retired."
Hawk nodded politely. Burns had already filled him in on who he'd be meeting, and he had no trouble recognizing these two from Burns' descriptions. Nicholas Linden was tall and fashionably slender, with watchful eyes and a practiced smile. He'd started out as a meat wagon chaser specializing in insurance cases, and had graduated through a series of well-publicized cases and well-bribed juries to a fairly successful practice in Low Torrey. At which point he suddenly developed a civic conscience and started agitating to put an end to the kind of sharp practices that had gotten him where he was. His fellow lawyers had persuaded him to join the Guard Advisory Council in the hope of distracting him from things best left alone. To no one's surprise, it worked. Michael Shire had been a captain in the Guard for 20 years before taking early retirement to go into business for himself as a private security consultant. He'd done well for himself over the past few years and was now responsible for most of the hired muscle on the West Side. He was a large, squarish man in his late 40s, wearing fashionably garish clothes that didn't suit him. He had a calm, self-satisfied face with cold, expressionless eyes. And these were two of the people who'd set themselves up as the guard's conscience.
"Will any of the others be joining us?"
"I'm afraid not, Captain. You must understand we all lead very busy lives outside the Advisory Council, and it isn't always possible for all of us to attend meetings called at such short notice. However, your message did say your business was both urgent and important, so Michael and I agreed to represent the others. Do please sit down, Captains. And help yourselves to some wine, if you will."
Hawk shook his head shortly and sat down. Burns also declined the wine, and he and the advisors joined Hawk in the chairs before the fire. Linden and Shire looked at Hawk and Burns expectantly.
"This is the situation as of right now."
Hawk set out the situation as clearly and concisely as he could, taking it from the raid on Morgan's factory to his growing belief that Morgan must be bribing someone fairly high up in the guard. There was a pause, and then Shire turned in his seat.
"I don't see what the fuss is all about."
Shire met Hawk's gaze unflinchingly.
"There's always been a certain amount of private enterprise in the guard. It's only natural for guards to augment their income on occasion, given the low wages. Everyone takes a special payment now and again. It's sort of an unofficial tax. If people want real protection, they've got to be prepared to pay for it. After all, a contented guard is much more likely to look out for you, isn't he? I think you're taking this a bit too seriously, Captain Hawk."
"I'm not talking about half-assed protection rackets. I'm talking about a high-ranking guard who's been bought and paid for by one of the city's biggest drug barons."
"So what? This is Haven, remember? There are people here it doesn't pay to cross, and Morgan is very definitely one of them. It's not in the guard's interest to start a war it couldn't win."
"This time it's different. Morgan's new drug is too dangerous to be ignored. And whoever's helping him in the guard is putting the whole damn city at risk, just to earn a nice little bonus. This isn't just corruption anymore, it's treason. I want this bastard, and you're going to help me identify him. You're both in a position to hear things, know things. People will talk to you who wouldn't talk to me. I want to know what they've been saying. I want the name."
Shire and Linden glanced at each other, and then Linden leaned forward. He fixed Hawk with an earnest gaze and chose his words carefully.
"You must understand, Captain, that my associate and I are taking a not inconsiderable risk in seeing you at all. You've made yourself dangerous to know. You've been making enemies, the wrong sort of enemies. The word is that Morgan has important friends, very well-connected people, who aren't taking kindly to your inquiries. Anyone who openly helped you would be putting his own neck in the noose."
"Refusing to talk to me can be pretty risky, too. I'm not playing by the rules anymore. I don't have the time.
Threats won't get you anywhere. To put it bluntly, Morgan is connected to people who are scarier than you'll ever be.
Then why are you talking to us at all?
Because I was captain in the Guard for 20 years, and there are some things I won't stand for. I might have taken the odd gratuity in my time and looked the other way when I was told, but I was always my own man. No one tells me to roll over on my back and play dead like a good dog. Not then, and not now. Lyndon here came to see me earlier today. He was scared. He overheard something he shouldn't have from one of Morgan's people, and he knew he wouldn't be safe as long as he was the only one who knew it. So he told me. And now he's going to tell you. There's no doubt that Morgan or the people he's associated with have infiltrated the Guard at practically every level, from the bottom right to the top. But for once, we have a name. Morgan's bought himself a Guard captain, someone so loyal and honorable as to be above suspicion.
Tell me the name.
Lyndon looked briefly at Shire for support.
You're not going to like this, Hawk. I don't have any proof or evidence. This is just what I heard. I could be wrong.
Just tell me the name!
Fisher. Captain Isabel Fisher.
Hawk launched himself out of his chair, both hands reaching for Lyndon. Burns grabbed at him, but Hawk shook him off. He took two handfuls of Lyndon's shirt and lifted him up into the air. The lawyer's face lost all its color, and his mouth worked soundlessly. Shire and Burns pulled at Hawk's arms, but he ignored them, thrusting his face close to Lyndon's.
You're lying, you bastard! They put you up to this, didn't they? Didn't they? Tell me the name, you bastard! Tell me the real name!
Lyndon struggled to get his breath, his eyes wide and staring.
Please, don't hurt me, I'm sorry!
He's telling the truth! Let him go, Hawk! He's just telling you what he heard!
That's right. Let him go, Hawk. Come on, let him go!
Hawk dropped the lawyer back onto his chair and turned away. Lyndon clawed at his collar, trying to get some air into his lungs. Burns and Shire backed away from Hawk, watching him carefully.
Take it easy, Hawk. It's just hearsay, that's all. They said themselves they had no proof or evidence.
It's a lie.
Of course it is.
Don't use that tone of voice with me, Burns. I'm not a child. I'm not a fool, either. This is just something Morgan's come up with to try and slow me down. Distract me from going after him. Well, it's not going to work. I know Isabel. It's impossible that she could be involved in anything like that. She wouldn't.
Of course not. Let's go, Hawk. We've got what we came for.
Hawk nodded and headed for the door without even looking at Shire and Lyndon. Burns made a quick, placating gesture to them and hurried out after his partner. Down in the street, Hawk strode blindly through the snow and slush, staring straight ahead. People took one look at his face and hurried to get out of his way. Burns walked along beside him, studying his partner anxiously.
We have to talk about this, Hawk. Of course, the idea of Fisher being a rogue is ridiculous, but we can't just ignore it either. Whoever the corrupt captain is, it has to be someone who'd normally be above suspicion. Someone so honest and trustworthy, no one would ever connect them with Morgan. Everyone we've talked to agrees on that. And it has to be said, there aren't many captains in the Guard who fill that description.
It isn't Isabel.
Then why name her in front of someone like Lyndon? Even if Morgan's people knew they were being overheard, how would they know you'd end up talking to Lyndon? You only decided to visit the advisors a short time ago.
He would have passed the word on and would have gotten back to me eventually. It's just a distraction, that's all.
Sure. Look, whoever the rogue is, it has to be someone close to us, close to you. Someone who knows you well enough to know the people you'd go to for answers. How else did Morgan's people know where to ambush us after we left St. Christoph?
We're probably being watched.
Not all the time. We'd notice.
Well, maybe he's got a sorcerer watching us magically. He had a sorcerer at the factory. How do we know he hasn't got another magic user working for him?
I think we'd better leave this till later. We're being followed again. Look around you.
Hawk's preoccupation fell away in a moment, and he looked casually about him, his hand moving naturally to the axe at his side.
Hell's teeth. How did I miss them? They're not exactly professional quality, are they? That's what happens when you let yourself get distracted. There's a lot of them. They make it 27, most of them wearing gang colors. How about you?
I only see 22, but I'll take your word for it. They must have known we were going to be here. Hawk, It's another bloody ambush. Better thought out than the last one, too. They're all around us this time.
Doesn't matter. I'm just in the mood to cut up a few bad guys.
Burns looked at him sharply.
Wait a minute, Hawk. This is no time to start feeling heroic. We're outnumbered more than 10-1 here.
So what do you suggest? Put our hands up and surrender nicely? And hope we'll get taken as prisoners of war? This may be a war, Burns, but no one's taking any prisoners.
We could always make a run for it.
We could, but how far do you think we'd get? The streets are narrow and crowded, and we're both dog-tired while our pursuers look decidedly fresh. There aren't even any fire escapes in easy reach this time. They planned this well, Burns, and I walked us right into it.
Passers-by began moving into the shelter of doorways so as to be safely out of the way when the killing began. Everyone knew what was happening. The ambushers weren't even trying to hide themselves anymore. Hawk stopped walking and looked openly around. Burns stopped beside him and looked quickly about for any escape route he might have missed. The ambushers were everywhere, moving confidently forward. Now that they were all out in the open, Burns counted 29 of them. They were dressed in ragged furs and leathers and carrying clubs and swords and axes. Some hefted broken bottles and lengths of metal piping. They all looked lean and hungry and very dangerous. Burns looked to Hawk for support, and a sudden chill ran through him. Hawk was smiling, a cold and nasty death's head grin. Burns felt an instinctive need to back away. He'd seen his partner go through many moods that day, but this was something new and awful, and for the first time, Burns understood why Hawk was so widely feared in the North Side. At this moment, he looked vicious, deadly, and totally unstoppable. Hawk looked at Burns briefly.
These aren't Morgan's people. These are street gang toughs from the Devil's Hook. I beat up their leader, a piece of slime called Hammer. Earlier on this morning, he must have declared vendetta on me. Knew I should have killed him.
He fell silent as one of the ambushers stepped forward, but his death's head grin never wavered. He recognized the man as the gang leader and drew his axe with a flourish. Hammer stopped where he was.
I've been looking for you, Hawk! No one messes with me and gets away with it! Not even the high and mighty Captain Hawk! Don't look so tough now, do you? Now you're on your own, and I've got my people here to back me up! You're going to die slow, Hawk. We're all going to take turns cutting on you. Going to take our time and get real inventive. You're going to scream and cry and beg for death before we're through.
The watching ambushers stirred uneasily. Hawk swept his axe back and forth before him.
Who's first?
No one moved. Hawk glanced at Burns.
Get out of here while you can. They don't care about you. They just want me. If you make a run for it, they'll probably let you go.
Forget it. They'll kill me anyway just for being a guard and being with you. Believe me, if I could see a way out of this mess, I'd take it. I'm not crazy. Do me a favor, Hawk. Next time you feel like punching out a gang leader, don't do it in front of witnesses. All right, you're supposed to be the expert on winning against impossible odds. What are we going to do? There's nowhere to run, and if we try and make a stand, they'll roll right over us.
Hawk nodded, still grinning at the ambushers and hefting his axe. Burns looked away. The grin was starting to unnerve him. One of the toughs stepped forward. Hawk looked at him, and he stopped where he was.
I think our best bet is to try and lose them in the side streets and alleyways. They're narrow and crowded, and the gang will only be able to come at us a few at a time. We should be able to take them easily, as long as we keep our heads.
What if they staked out the alleyways with more of their people?
We fight our way through and keep running. Maybe we can outrun them.
What happens if we get trapped in a dead end?
Then we see how many of the bastards we can take with us. Think positive, Burns. We're not dead yet.
Now!
The toughs moved forward from every direction. Hawk lifted his axe threateningly and then sprinted toward the nearest side street. Burns charged after him, his stomach churning sickly. Three gang members made to block their way. Hawk cut down the first two with vicious sweeps of his axe and hit the third man with a lowered shoulder. The massive tough was thrown aside like a child. Burns hacked halfway through his waist without even slowing. He pounded after Hawk down the narrow street with the gang howling behind them. More gang members appeared out of darkened alley mouths, but somehow Hawk and Burns managed to cut a way through them and keep on running, leaving bodies lying in pools of vivid scarlet on the grimy snow. Hawk glared about him, trying to figure out exactly where he was. This wasn't an area he knew particularly well, and he couldn't afford to stop and look for landmarks hidden or disguised by the recent snow. His breath burned in his chest, and he could feel the beginnings of a stitch in his side. Normally, he prided himself on his stamina, but it had been a long day, and it wasn't getting any shorter. From the sound of it, Burns was finding the going equally hard. And then they rounded a sharp corner and skidded to a halt as they saw more gang members waiting for them. 10 of them blocked the narrow alley, all armed with some kind of weapon and smiling confidently. Hawk glanced back over his shoulder. The pursuers were coming up fast, and there was no way out. Hawk felt more anger than anything. Being killed in a gang ambush was such a stupid way to go. And now he'd never get the chance to clear Fisher's name. He'd make them pay for that. He threw himself at the smiling faces before him and laughed aloud as he saw their expressions change to shock and terror as his axe tore through them like firewood. He sensed Burns fighting desperately at his side, but Hawk had no room in him for anything but rage. The first few died easily before his fury, but there were too many of them for him to break through, and soon the rest of the gang arrived. Hawk and Burns fought back to back, surrounded by screaming mouths and flailing weapons, hemmed in by the jostling press of bodies. The sheer number of attackers gave Hawk and Burns a fighting chance. The gang was so eager to get at their victims that they kept getting in each other's way and deflecting many of the blows meant for the two guards. Hawk fought on fiercely, sending blood spraying through the freezing air, but knew it was only a matter of time before someone got in a lucky blow. Then his guard would drop and he'd go down under a dozen swords. And if he was lucky, he'd die before Hammer could pull his people off. He was just sorry he'd dragged Burns into this. Hawk fought on, as much out of stubbornness as anything. If he had to die, he was going to make them work for it. A sword licked in past his defenses and punched through his side and out again. Blood ran thickly down his hip and leg, and the strength seemed to flow out of him along with the blood. He swung his axe clumsily, and the swords were everywhere. A thick mist sprang up suddenly in the alleyway, diffusing the amber lamplight in strange ways, and misty gray ropes curled and tightened around the gang members' throats. They dropped their weapons to tear at the strangling mists with desperate hands and fell gagging to the ground. Curling mists lashed viciously among the gang, sending them flying this way and that. The gang fled, screaming back down the alley and out into the surrounding streets. The mists flowed after them like a relentless river. Dead bodies littered the alley. Hammer stared uncomprehendingly about him, abandoned by his men, and then backed away through the slush and the gore of battle as Hawk loomed up before him, grim and bloody, his gaze colder than winter could ever be. He turned to run, and Hawk cut him down with one blow of his axe. Hammer fell dying to the ground, and there was enough anger still in Hawk for him to regret it was over so quickly. Hawk turned to see how Burns fared and fell back against the wall as the wound on his side caught up with him. The stabbing pain filled his mind, and then a strong arm curled around his shoulders, supporting him, and a cool hand pressed against his bloody side. There was a brief crawling sensation as the wound knitted itself together, and then the sorceress Mystique stepped back and grinned at him.
I thought I'd leave the gang leader for you to take care of personally, but I can't believe you just walked right into that ambush. If I hadn't been following you two, they'd have had to bury what was left of you in a closed coffin.
I had a lot on my mind.
Hawk felt gingerly at his side.
And it must be said, this has not been one of my better days. Thanks for rescuing us.
You're welcome. But next time, don't go dashing off like that. I nearly didn't catch up in time.
Hawk nodded and looked across at Burns. The man's clothing was soaked in blood, but he nodded quickly to Hawk and Mystique to show he was all right. Hawk looked down at the gang leader, lying dead and broken on the dirty snow.
Damn, I should have taken him alive. He might have been able to answer some questions.
What could he have known? He isn't connected with Morgan. He was just after you because you made him lose face in front of his people.
Someone had to have told him where to find us. He couldn't have followed us all the way from the hook.
He didn't. I've been following you for some time, and they were already here waiting for you when you went in to talk to the advisors.
Hawk looked at her narrowly.
I didn't see you following us.
Well, after all, darling, I am a sorceress.
Oh, all right. Want to tell me why you were following us? And why you dropped out of sight right after we left the hook?
The sorceress scowled and leaned back against the alley wall with her arms folded.
I know something that certain important people don't want known. Something dangerous. So I decided to disappear for a while and do some hard thinking. I needed someone to talk to, someone I could trust. You were the obvious choice, Hawk, but I had to be sure you were what you were supposed to be. So I've been following you. Even now, I'm not sure I'm doing the right thing. You're not going to like this, Hawk.
Tell me what you know.
I was talking to one of the prisoners we took in Morgan's factory before we brought them back to headquarters. He was mad as hell because the guard captain that Morgan had been paying off hadn't warned them about the raid. I asked him for the captain's name, but he didn't know it. He knew what the captain looked like, though. He recognized her when he saw her during the raid. It was Fisher, Hawk. Captain Isabel Fisher.
Fisher looked out the repaired study window and glowered sourly at the array of armed men camped out on the wide lawns. There had to be 100 men out there now, wearing chainmail under their furs and warming their hands at the scattered iron braziers. If the peace talks had had this kind of protection before, two of the delegates and all of the original security force might still be alive. Fisher felt obscurely guilty that she hadn't gotten to know the men under her command before they were killed. As it was, it would take a hell of an army to get past the new security force. That, or a particularly nasty piece of magic. Fisher decided she wasn't going to think about that. She still got edgy every time she remembered the flood of twisted creatures that spilled out of the split in reality. She'd only just got over jumping at every sudden noise.
Amateur, professional, trained, self-taught, the fact remains you know and use magic.
Raised angry voices cut across her reverie, and she turned her back on the window to study the squabbling delegates. Her mouth compressed into a thin, flat line as she realized they were going around and around in the same futile circles. The peace talks were becoming increasingly warlike, with the two lords blaming everyone and everything but themselves for the present sorry state of affairs. Lord Nightingale of Outremer was the loudest voice, quite openly determined to lay the blame for everything at Haven's door. Lord Regis was trying to be reasonable and diplomatic, but his temper was visibly shortening, and his voice had already risen to match Nightingale's. The two majors, Comer and Attorney, had withdrawn from the fray and settled themselves in a corner with the drinks cabinet. They were busily comparing whiskies and doing their best to ignore the whole unpleasantness. They had no interest in recriminations or name-calling and had said so loudly. Unfortunately, it hadn't been loud enough to compete with the racket Regis and Nightingale were making, so their objections went completely unnoticed by the two lords. Captain Apoen stood with his back to the fireplace, watching everything and saying nothing. He hadn't spoken a dozen words to anyone since he directed the new security force as they cleared up the mess left by the assault. Fisher understood. The men under his command had been longtime associates and friends. Now he had lost them all in one brief clash of arms.
I think this nonsense has gone on long enough. We're supposed to be here to discuss the border problem, not players who can shout and stamp their foot the loudest. We'll probably never find out exactly who betrayed us, and it doesn't matter worth a damn anyway. The attack was a failure, and the talks can go on. Now, may I respectfully suggest that we get back to what we're supposed to be doing and leave the squabbling and whining to the politicians. That's what they're paid for.
De Tournay started to nod vigorously in agreement, and then stopped as he realized both Nightingale and Regis were glaring at Comer.
Your opinion is noted, Major Comer, but allow me to remind you that your function at these talks is to provide us with military information and advice, nothing more. The Lord Nightingale and I are quite capable of deciding what is important here, and right now nothing is more important than determining who betrayed us. We could all have been killed, dammit, and I want to know who was responsible, particularly since it seems we can't trust our own security people to keep us safe.
Major de Tournay stirred in his corner and then shrugged uncomfortably as Regis turned his glare on him.
With respect, my lord, no security system is perfect. Fisher and Apoen did their best in extremely difficult circumstances.
He shut up as Nightingale turned to glare at him too.
When I want your advice, Major de Tournay, I will ask for it. Until then, you will oblige me by keeping your mouth shut. Is that clear?
De Tournay and Comer looked at each other, nodded formally to their respective lords, and returned their attention to the whiskey decanters. Regis looked back at Fisher and Apoen.
Now then, captains, it cannot have escaped your attention that our security here has been hopelessly breached. Whether this was the result of internal treachery or simple incompetence on your part has yet to be determined. You can both be very sure there will be a full inquiry into your behavior today.
I don't think we can wait for that. Someone has revealed to our enemies not only the location of this house, but also the coordinates of the pocket dimension. Quite a few people knew about this house, that was inevitable. but only a handful knew about the pocket dimension. Don't you find it interesting that our security problems only began after Captain Fisher joined us?
Oh, come on. You're not seriously accusing Fisher. She's a legend in Haven. And she fought like hell against the mercenaries and the creatures in the dimension. In fact, if not for her, I wouldn't have lived long enough to reach the dimension. And you wouldn't have lived long enough to close the dimensional doorway. We owe her our lives.
Look at the facts. The mercenaries didn't attack the house till she got here. And the creatures didn't attack us until she joined us in the pocket dimension.
He has a point. And it does seem odd that Captain Fisher should have been in the middle of so much fighting and come out of it with only minor superficial wounds.
She's a good fighter. Everyone knows that.
No one's that good.
And I must admit the new security forces have brought rather disquieting news concerning Fisher's partner, Captain Hawk.
Hawk? What about Hawk?
Regis fixed her with a steady gaze.
It appears that Captain Hawk is completely out of control. He's assaulted a superior officer and gone on a rampage through the city, attacking people in some kind of personal vendetta and killing anyone who gets in his way. We don't know exactly how many people he's killed, but we have a confirmed account of more than 30 dead and almost as many injured. At least a dozen were just innocent passers-by.
I don't believe it.
In view of what you've just told me, I don't think I care to trust my well-being to any security force commanded by Captain Fisher. I'm afraid I must insist she be replaced if the talks are to continue.
I have to agree. Well, Fisher, have you anything to say for yourself?
I didn't want to come here in the first place. If you don't want me, I'll leave.
It's not that simple. We can't allow you to just walk out of here. You know too much. And besides, I don't believe in letting traitors walk free. Regis, I want this woman arrested and held incommunicado till these talks are over.
Fisher, hand over your sword. You're under arrest. The charge is treason.
Nightingale smiled at Fisher coldly.
I'll see you hanged for your part in this, bitch.
Fisher drew her sword and dropped into her fighting stance.
You in what army, Nightingale?
Fisher, that's enough. Give your sword to App Owen. That's an order.
Stuff your order. I may be slow, but I'm not crazy. You're just desperate for a scapegoat, and I look like the best bet. Well, sorry, people, but I'm afraid I must decline the honor.
Regis looked at App Owen.
Arrest her. Do whatever you have to, but stop her. She mustn't leave here alive.
App Owen hesitated, and Fisher threw a chair at him. She was across the room and out the door before the two majors could get to their feet, and App Owen could disentangle himself from the chair.
Stop her!
Stop that woman!
Stop her at once!
I have no part in these talks!
Fisher slammed the door shut behind her and grinned briefly as she heard someone crash into it. She sprinted down the corridor to the front door. She yanked it open and charged out into the grounds. The new security people looked up in surprise and moved toward her, anticipating some kind of emergency in the house. Fisher grabbed the first officer she saw and pointed him at the front door.
Block off that door and don't let anyone out, no matter what. Take as many men as you need. Everything depends on you. Now move it.
The officer threw her a quick salute and charged toward the door. Fisher ran for the front gate, breathlessly informing every man-at-arms she passed of the terrible emergency up at the house.
Hurry to the house! More attacks!
The emergency became more and more terrible, and the details more and more fantastic as she passed through the main body of men, determined to stir up the maximum confusion. She finally reached the gate and paused a moment to look back. The men-at-arms milled aimlessly back and forth, trampling the snow into slush, shouting incoherently to each other, and searching desperately for some sign of the enemy. Fisher grinned and set off down the street at a fast but eminently respectable pace, so as not to attract too much attention. First thing was to get rid of the guard's uniform. It was too distinctive. Maybe change it for a long robe with a hood, something large and bulky enough to substantially alter her appearance. When word finally got out from the house, there were going to be an awful lot of people looking for Captain Fisher. There was no point in trying to protest her innocence. It was clear Nightingale picked on her as the scapegoat, and the others would go along with him in order to keep the talks going. As she learned from the beginning, the peace talks were far more important than any guard captain. She was expendable. But she wasn't about to let anyone or anything get between her and her search for Hawk. From the sound of it, things got far out of hand since she left him with Burns. She frowned. Strange she heard no mention of Burns. She shook her head fiercely. That could wait. All that mattered was finding Hawk. If he really was out of control, she was the only one with any chance of stopping him. Whatever happened between Hawk and Morgan, he'd listen to her. And then they'd work together to find out who the real traitor was. What started as business was now personal.
You incompetent fool! What kind of security officer are you, letting a woman escape? Letting a trapper in here?
In the study, Regis and Nightingale vented their rage on Captain F.O.N. Outside in the grounds, Major Comer and Major de Tournay desperately tried to restore some kind of order to the chaos Fisher created among the men-at-arms. Half of them still ran around like mad things, looking for something to hit and mistaking each other for the enemy as often as not. F.O.N. listened to the craziness outside and somehow kept the smile from his lips. Eventually, the lords ran out of accusations and curses and stopped a moment to get their breath back. F.O.N. cleared his throat.
What exactly do you want me to do, my lords? What are your orders?
Find Fisher. I don't care how you do it, but find her.
Take 20 men and go out into the city. Spread the word among the guard and on the streets. I'm authorizing you to offer a reward of 5,000 ducats for Fisher's capture, dead or alive.
F.O.N. looked at him sharply.
But surely, my lord, we need her alive for questioning.
We need her stopped before she can do any more damage. As long as she's free, she's a threat. You know her reputation, Captain. You try to take her alive, she'll just kill your men and disappear again. We can't risk that. If you find her, kill her. No quarter, no mercy.
Burns and Mystique followed Hawk silently as he led the way through a maze of narrow back streets and shadowed alleyways. He'd hardly said a word since Mystique reluctantly named Fisher as the traitor, and his cold, grim visage hadn't encouraged conversation. Burns and Mystique glanced at each other, but a few raised eyebrows and quick shrugs were enough to make it clear neither of them knew what was going through Hawk's mind. Given what he was capable of, his continued silence was worrying. Passers-by hurried to get out of his way, but Hawk seemed totally oblivious to everything except his own thoughts. He walked unhurriedly through the shabby streets, staring straight ahead, his bloodied axe still in his hand. They finally emerged on a quiet side street, and Hawk led his companions into a squalid little tavern called the Dragon's Blood. The air was thick with smoke, and the sawdust on the floor looked like it hadn't been changed in years. Mystique wrinkled her nose. Burns pushed the door closed with his fingertips and then wiped his hand fastidiously on his cloak. The place was as dark as a coal cellar, with only occasional pools of dirty yellow light at the occupied tables. Two storm lanterns were hanging over the bar. The window shutters had been nailed shut to ensure privacy. Shadowed drinkers watched silently as Hawk led his companions to a booth at the back of the room. The bartender emerged from behind his bar to serve them personally.
Three beers.
They sat in silence until he came back with the drinks. Hawk paid him the exact amount and then dismissed him with a curt wave of his hand. The bartender shrugged and went back to the bar to continue polishing his glasses with a dirty rag. Mystique looked dubiously at the drink in front of her and decided that she wasn't thirsty. Hawk took two deep swallows from his beer and then put the tankard down and stared into it.
The beer's safe enough here, but don't touch the spirits. Half of it's made from wood alcohol.
Burns sipped at his beer to show willingness, and his lips thinned away from his teeth at the bitterness.
Nice place you've chosen, Hawk. Great atmosphere. I'll bet plague rats stay away from here in case they catch something. Do you drink here often?
Only when I have some hard thinking to do. No one bothers me here.
Yeah. Burns and Mystique waited patiently for him to continue. Hawk wiped the froth from his mouth with the back of his hand and leaned back in his chair, staring out into the gloom around them.
It all comes down to Morgan. He has all the answers. If we're ever going to get to the truth of what's really going on here, we have to find Morgan.
Half the guards in Haven are trying to do just that. But Morgan's always been able to disappear when he needed to. He could be anywhere in Haven. Our people are out leaning on every loose mouth in the city, but no one knows anything. Morgan's gone to ground so thoroughly this time that even his own people don't seem to know how to contact him. You must really have thrown a scare into him.
He can't afford to be totally isolated. He still has to move his super chacal before word gets out about how dangerous it is. And to do that, he must be doing business, however indirectly, with some distributor.
Exactly. Morgan may have crawled into his hole and pulled it in after him, but his lieutenants are still out there, doing business on his behalf. All we have to do is tail them, and eventually one of them will lead us to Morgan.
Byrne shook his head.
Hawk, those people are professionals. They'll spot any tail we put on them.
They won't spot a sorcerer. How about it, Mystique? Can you follow those people with your magic?
There is a way, but I don't know these lieutenants like you do. You'll have to open your mind so that I can learn what you know. Are you and Burns willing to do that?
No. Sorry, Hawk, but there are some things I won't do for you or anyone else. My thoughts are private, and my memories are my own.
There's no need to be so defensive. It's a common reaction to my ability, though why anyone should assume their secret thoughts are so fascinating that I couldn't resist peeking is beyond me.
Take what you need from me, but don't go wandering. There are things in my mind you don't want to know.
I can believe that.
She closed her eyes, and a cold breeze swept through Hawk's mind, ruffling his thoughts, picking things up and putting them down again. Images flickered in Hawk's mind like flaring candles, come and gone so quickly he barely recognized them. And then Mystique opened her eyes, and his mind was quiet again. Mystique nodded, satisfied.
Got it. Names and faces for all 20 of his lieutenants. Now I need both of you to sit still and be quiet. This is going to be very difficult, and I can't afford any distractions.
She closed her eyes again and let her mind drift up and out, becoming one with the mists. Wherever mists and fogs rose throughout the city, she had eyes and ears. She became the mists, flowing over houses and streets, through keyholes and under doors. Nothing could hide from her. The mists carried her up into the sky. She soared high above the city, seeing it spread out below like a vast, dark stone labyrinth of sudden turnings and endless possibilities. Lights burned in its darkness like furnaces in hell. She swooped down over the city, spreading her consciousness among the many streets and alleyways as mists curled everywhere in Haven. Buildings raced past her at bewildering speed, people appearing and disappearing in an instant, but all of them observed and studied and dismissed. Words from a thousand conversations battered her hearing like pounding waves on the rocks outside the harbor. Mystique let it all flow past and over her, sifting through the endless noise and chaos until finally she found what she was looking for. His name was Griff, a shabby, skinny man with long, greasy, dark hair, darting eyes, and a quick, unpleasant smile. He wore a long frock coat mended at the collar and elbows and carried a quarterstaff. He didn't look like much, but bigger men than he bobbed their heads and smiled nervously in his presence. He was Morgan's eyes and voice and executioner, and everyone knew it. Mystique curled lazily on the air as Griff strode down a gloomy side street, unobtrusively checking now and again that he wasn't being followed. Mystique floated after him, everywhere and nowhere, ahead and behind him. Griff took a sudden turn into an alleyway and stopped dead just inside the alley mouth. He looked casually about him to be sure he was unobserved, and then moved slowly forward, counting the steps under his breath. He then stopped, reached out, and pressed 5 bricks in the left-hand wall in a careful sequence. A door slowly appeared in the wall, a great slab of solid steel, featureless, save for a single molded handle, forming itself moment by moment out of the dirty brickwork. Griff waited impatiently, his gaze darting back and forth, and then he pulled the door open. A bright crimson light flared out into the alley, and Griff stepped forward into it. The door shut behind him, cutting off the bloody light, and melted back into the brickwork. In the renewed gloom of the alleyway, the roiling mists curled and twisted triumphantly. In the tavern, Hawk and Burns watched silently as Mystique closed her eyes and fell immediately into a trance state. All trace of personality dropped out of her face as her muscles relaxed completely. The air grew thick and indistinct around her as wisps of mist seeped out of her skin. The mists gradually thickened until they were boiling up off her like ectoplasm at a seance. The tavern quickly emptied as the other customers headed for the door at a run. The bartender disappeared behind his bar. Burns turned to rise from the chair and then sank reluctantly back into it when Hawk glared at him. Hawk watched, fascinated, as Mystique's eyes darted back and forth beneath her closed eyelids, as though she were dreaming. And then her eyes snapped open, and personality flooded back into her face. The mists in the booth began to dissipate, stirred by a sourceless wind. Mystique fixed Hawk with her gaze.
I've got him. Morgan's been hiding out in another pocket dimension hidden off Packet Lane, not 10 minutes' walk from here.
Did you get a look inside? Did you see Morgan himself?
Not really. I could sense his presence along with a dozen or so bodyguards, but when I tried to enter, I brushed up against another sorcerer's wards, so I got the hell out of there before I gave myself away.
Are you sure there's just the one sorcerer?
One is usually enough to screw up any mission.
Hawk ignored him, his gaze fixed on Mystique.
No, there's just the one.
Good. Burns and I will take care of the bodyguards. You handle the sorcerer. Only this time, let's all try really hard not to bring the pocket dimension down around our ears, all right?
Mystique led the way to Packet Lane, striding confidently through the thickening fog. Hawk carried his axe at the ready and kept a careful watch, but no one seemed to be paying them any particular attention. People tended not to look at guards if they could help it, on the grounds they didn't want guards looking at them. Burns grumbled most of the way to Packet Lane, muttering that the odds stank, the whole idea was crazy, and they ought to call headquarters for a backup. Eventually, Hawk said no with enough force to prove that he meant it. Burns shut up and sulked the rest of the way. As long as he did it quietly, Hawk didn't care. He couldn't afford to have headquarters involved at this stage. If they were, he'd have to tell them about Fisher. Mystique finally brought them to Packet Lane, and they stood together in the alley mouth, staring into the gloom. Nothing moved in the alleyway, and the shadows lay quiet and undisturbed. Burns drew his sword. He glanced at Hawk, who nodded to Mystique. She walked forward, counting out the steps, and pressed the 5 bricks in the correct sequence. The huge steel door appeared out of the brickwork and swung open at Mystique's gesture. They stepped forward into the bright crimson light, and the door swung shut behind them. The 3 guards stood close together a moment, squinting into the crimson glare.
Spread out!
They made too good a target standing as a group. Their eyes quickly adjusted, and Hawk relaxed a little as he realized the long corridor before them was completely empty. The brilliant light seemed to come from everywhere and nowhere, bathing everything in its blood-red glow. The corridor had no furniture, no doors, and no visible turnings off. The walls and the floor were bare wood, not even varnished. Hawk took the point and led the way forward, axe at the ready. Burns and Mystique followed close behind. Their footsteps echoed loudly from the bare wooden floor, no matter how softly they trod. The corridor seemed to go on forever. Hawk glanced back over his shoulder, and his hackles rose sharply as he saw the corridor stretching away behind him into the distance, with no sign of the door through which they had entered. He shrugged uncomfortably and trudged on down the corridor. It had to lead somewhere. The corridor suddenly rounded a corner and branched in two. Hawk looked down both paths, but there was nothing to choose between them. He looked back and forth while Burns and Mystique waited patiently for him to make up his mind, and then he tensed. He gestured quickly for the other two to fall back. Burns and Mystique retreated around the corner. Hawk eased back around the corner after them and stood poised, listening to the footsteps draw nearer. A man-at-arms rounded the corner and Hawk whipped an arm around his throat before he had time to react. The man-at-arms started to call out, and Hawk tightened the hold until all that came out was a strangled croak.
Don't move.
Hawk waited till the man was perfectly still and then eased his grip a little. Hawk nodded to Burns and he stepped forward and took the man's sword. Hawk put his mouth close to the prisoner's ear.
Morgan, where is he?
Are you crazy? He'll have you killed for this.
Hawk tightened his hold, then relaxed again.
What's your name?
Justin.
Do you know who I am?
No. Who are you?
I'm Hawk, Captain Hawk.
Oh, God.
Where's Morgan?
It's not far. I'll lead you to him.
That's a good boy. I'm gonna let you go now. Behave yourself and you might come out of this alive.
He let go of the man-at-arms and gestured for him to lead the way. Justin nodded jerkily, rubbed at his throat, and set off around the corner and down the left-hand path. Hawk and Mystique followed close behind, with Burns bringing up the rear. Hawk leaned in close to Mystique and spoke so that only she could hear.
Is there any way Morgan can know we're coming? Could his sorcerer have set up any protective wards in here?
Mystique shook her head.
If he had, I'd know. There were wards and magical booby traps crawling all over the alleyway, but I defused them by summoning the door correctly. Keep your guard up, though, just in case. If I were Morgan, I'd have some kind of fallback defenses.
It's probably what the dozen bodyguards are supposed to be. I know how Morgan thinks. I've met his kind before. He thinks he's so big and powerful, no one would dare just walk in on him. After all, he's got his own sorcerer and a dozen bodyguards to protect him. Who'd be crazy enough to come in here after him in his own stronghold?
Mystique looked at Hawk.
He might just have a point.
Morgan's just a cheap thug with delusions of grandeur. And I'm going to knock him down and rub his nose in it until he tells me what I want to know.
The man-at-arms led them through a short series of passageways to a pair of huge, polished oaken doors. Somewhere along the way, the sourceless crimson light had changed to a homely golden glow. There were expensive paintings and tapestries on the walls, and a deep pile carpet on the floor. Hawk looked at the double doors for a long moment, and then turned and smiled at their guide.
Well done, Justin. I'm very pleased with you. Mystique, put him to sleep for a while.
The sorceress locked eyes with Justin, and all color drained out of his face. His eyes rolled up in his head, and he fell limply backwards. Burns caught him and lowered him to the floor. Hawk hefted his axe. He reached forward and carefully opened one of the doors an inch. He looked back at Burns and Mystique.
No mercy, no quarter. But whatever happens, I want Morgan alive. He's no use to me dead.
He charged in, axe at the ready. Burns and Mystique charged in after him, eyes darting around the vast chamber as they searched for their first target. Morgan was reclining on embroidered cushions with a beautiful young woman, drinking wine from a silver goblet and whispering something into her ear as she giggled helplessly. Half a dozen men-at-arms were playing cards at a table in a far corner. There was no sign of any sorcerer. The men at the table looked around, startled as the doors burst open, and then scrambled to their feet, grabbing for their swords. Morgan pushed aside his scantily clad companion and struggled to get to his feet, slipping and sliding on the cushions. Hawk sprinted forward, hoping to get to Morgan before the men-at-arms could reach him. But Morgan finally got his feet under him and ran for the far door. Thin streamers of mist shot past Hawk and wrapped themselves around Morgan, bringing him crashing to the floor. The far door flew open, revealing a tall, gaunt-faced man dressed in sorcerer's black. He gestured quickly, and the misty coils holding Morgan disappeared. Hawk and Burns threw themselves at the charging men-at-arms. Hawk cut down the first two to reach him with savage sweeps of his axe. Blood pooled thickly on the floor as he stepped quickly over the writhing bodies to attack the next man. They stood face-to-face for a moment, exchanging cut and thrust and parry, but the man was no match for Hawk's cold fury, and both of them knew it. The swordsman began to back away, and Hawk went after him. He swung his axe with vicious skill and then caught glimpses of flashing steel out of the corner of his eye. He threw himself to one side, and the young woman's sword just missed him. Hawk kicked the man-at-arms in the knee, elbowed him in the face, and turned quickly to face the young woman as she attacked him with just as much skill as the man-at-arms. Hawk wondered briefly where she'd hidden a sword in such a brief outfit, and then was forced to give her his full attention as she pressed home her attack. She was good with a sword, and worse still, fresh and rested, while he was fighting off a long day's fatigue. He stood his ground, swinging his axe with both hands, but she deflected most of his blows and easily dodged the rest. Once again, Hawk caught a glimpse of movement at his side and quickly sidestepped. The man-at-arms he'd elbowed threw himself forward and accidentally impaled himself on the young woman's sword. She froze in shock, and Hawk slammed the butt of his axe against her head. She fell to the floor and lay still. Hawk glowered down at her. If he'd had any sense, he'd have killed her while he had the chance, but he always was too chivalrous for his own good.
She might answer questions Morgan wouldn't.
He looked around him, suddenly aware the room was strangely quiet. Burns had dealt with the other men-at-arms and was standing over his last kill, breathing heavily and checking himself for wounds. There didn't seem to be anything serious. Hawk grinned. There was a lot to be said for the advantage of surprise, not to mention the adrenaline provided by extreme desperation. He looked across at Mystique, who was standing very still, her face cold, her eyes locked on the other sorcerer, still standing by the far door. Stray magic spat and sparked on the air between them. Mists curled and twisted around Mystique like unfinished ghosts, and then leapt forward with heart-stopping speed, only to dissipate and fall apart before they could reach the sorcerer. He raised his hand in a short, casual gesture, and all around Mystique the floor bulged suddenly upwards, tearing itself apart. The jagged wood erupted into thick, twisting branches that clutched at the air like gnarled fingers. Barbed thorns thrust out of the crackling wood as the branches stretched toward Mystique. Thick tendrils of mist boiled up the sorceress and shot forward to engulf the lengthening branches. The unliving wood cracked and splintered as the mists writhed, ripping the branches apart. Beads of sweat appeared on the sorcerer's face as the mists advanced on him. Sharp wooden stalagmites thrust out of the floor and wall around Mystique, piercing the air with razored points, but none of them came close to touching her. A pearly haze built around the sorcerer, thickening inexorably into a fog that swallowed him up. There was a single choked cry from inside the fog, and then silence. The fog quickly cleared, dispersed by a sourceless wind, and there was no trace of the sorcerer anywhere. Hawk decided not to ask. He didn't think he wanted to know. Mystique glanced across at him.
That's what comes of over-specialization. If he hadn't limited himself to working with wood, he might have been able to do some real damage.
You only work with mists.
Hawk strode quickly over to Morgan, who was still lying where he'd fallen.
Mists are different. You can do a lot with mists.
Hawk shrugged, grabbed Morgan by the collar, and dragged him to his feet. The drug baron twisted suddenly, a knife gleaming in his hand. Hawk let go and jumped back, sucking in his gut, and the knife ripped through his furs and out again without touching him. Morgan drew back his hand for another thrust, and Hawk caught him with a straight-finger jab just below the breastbone. Morgan's face paled, and the knife slipped from his numb fingers. Hawk grabbed him by the shirt front and slammed him back against the nearest wall. He put his face close to Morgan's and showed the drug baron his death's head smile.
Talk to me, Morgan.
What? What do you want to know?
Morgan fought to keep his voice even, but he couldn't face Hawk's cold gaze. He looked over Hawk's shoulder at Burns and Mystique standing together, and his face paled even more.
Let's start with a drug. The Super Shakal. Where is it?
In one of the back rooms here.
Morgan looked reluctantly back at Hawk.
There are lots of empty rooms here. More than I can ever use.
Have you started moving it yet?
No, we've been having difficulty setting up a new distribution network, thanks to your interference.
It's nice to be appreciated. Now let's talk about the drug. The Super Shakal is something new. You didn't come up with it yourself. Developing a new drug takes lots of time and money. Not to mention a staff of high-level alchemists in their own private lab. And that's out of your league, Morgan. So how did you get your hands on it?
Morgan tried to shrug, but Hawk had too tight a hold on him.
It came in through the docks, disguised as spices. All I had to do was make sure it hadn't been cut with anything, then package it and make the connection with the distributors. The drug itself was financed by outside money.
Hawk frowned thoughtfully.
Outside money? Outside Haven or outside the Low Kingdoms?
Didn't know, didn't care. Money's money, I don't give a damn where it comes from. This sounded like a good deal, so I went for it. I never got to talk to the real backers, they always worked through middlemen. I can give you their names if you want, but it won't do you any good. They'll have left Haven by now. I plan to be long gone myself once the drug hit the streets.
You really are a piece of slime, you know that?
Hawk thrust his face up close to Morgan's, and the drug baron tried to shrink back into the solid wall. Hawk's voice was calm and even, but his face held a bitter rage only barely held in check.
You knew what the drug was, and what it would do to anyone who took it. You knew that once the Super Shakal hit the streets, there'd be a bloodbath that would tear Haven apart, but you went ahead with it anyway.
Come on, Hawk. If I hadn't gone for it, someone else would have. You're exaggerating the dangers, so we lose a few scum from the streets. So what? No one who really matters would have been hurt. And there's millions to be made from this drug. Once word gets out, everyone will want to try it. It gives a kind of hit no one's ever been able to deliver before. Even the weakest man can become strong enough and brave enough to get back at everyone who's ever done him down. Millions of ducats, Hawk. Think of it. It's not too late. You can still cut yourself in. There's enough money in this for everyone.
Hawk grinned at Morgan and he shut up.
No deals, Morgan. Now then, you've done very well so far. Just one more question, and I'll be finished with you. Answer it correctly, and you'll live to stand trial. You bought off a lot of people in the guard while setting up this deal, but I'm interested in one name in particular. You bought yourself a guard captain. You know who I mean. The well-respected captain, the one who no one would suspect, the one who made your drugs vanish from guard headquarters. I want to know who that captain is, Morgan. I want to know very badly. So you tell me the name, Morgan, or I swear I'll cut you into pieces right here and now.
Hawk! You can't do this! It's inhuman!
Shut up, Burns!
He has to stand trial, Hawk. He'll tell us everything we need to know under a truth spell.
I need to know now! Talk to me, Morgan!
Stop it, Hawk! I won't stand for this!
Hawk half turned to shout at Burns, and Morgan brought his knee up sharply into Hawk's groin. Hawk fell backwards, momentarily paralyzed by the pain. Morgan made a dash for the far door, but Mystique put herself between him and the door. Mists boiled up off her outstretched hands. Morgan produced another knife from somewhere and lunged. Burns ran him through from behind with his sword. Morgan sank slowly to his knees, still holding onto his knife. Blood ran thickly from Morgan's mouth. He fell forward and lay still. Burns pulled his sword free. He knelt down beside the body, tried for a pulse at the neck, and shook his head. He got to his feet again, and a hand grabbed his shoulder from behind. He looked around, startled. Hawk punched him in the mouth.
What the f...
Burns stumbled backwards, blood spilling down his chin. Hawk went after him, but Mystique grabbed him from behind and held him firmly.
Stop it, Hawk! That's enough!
Hawk struggled fiercely, but he was still weakened by Morgan's attack and he couldn't break her grip. His gaze fixed on Burns.
You stupid bastard! I told you we needed him alive! How is he going to answer questions now?
I'm sorry. I didn't think. I just saw him lunging at Mystique and I really thought he was going to kill her.
I could have handled him.
Yes, I'm sure you could have.
Burns looked at the blood smeared across his hand.
I didn't think. I'm sorry.
Damn you. What are we going to do now? He was the only one who knew all the names.
Hawk shook his head sickly.
It's all right, Mystique. You can let me go now. I'm all right.
She let him go and stood back. Hawk moved over to Morgan's body and knelt down beside it. Pain shot through him. He'd managed to take some of Morgan's kneeing on his thigh, but the pain was still bad enough to make him move like an old man. He tried for a pulse, but couldn't find one. Hawk searched the body slowly and methodically, but didn't come up with anything useful apart from a small bunch of keys. He got to his feet again, with a little help from Mystique.
At least we got the drugs back. And this time I'll make sure they don't go missing, even if I have to feed every damn package to the incinerator myself.
We ought to search the place before we go. There's always a chance he kept records of who was working for him, and who he was paying off.
Hawk nodded curtly.
It probably had more sense than to leave something like that just lying about, but it's worth a look. Don't move anything, though. We'll leave the real search to the experts. The place is probably rigged with booby traps.
A sudden thought struck him, and he looked quickly at Mystique.
Or is this place going to collapse around our ears like the other one?
The sorceress shook her head.
Solid as rock. Whoever set up this place knew what they were doing.
They headed for the far door, Mystique staying close by Hawk in case he needed to lean on her again. Burns kept a tactful distance.
Hawk, would you really have used your axe on Morgan?
I was bluffing. Mostly. Not really as bad as my reputation makes out.
You convinced me. I've never seen anyone look so mad.
I wanted the name.
Hawk, we already know the name.